John.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, I did it faster than normal. How you feeling?
Yeah, you're all you're full of beans this morning.
Raring to go.
I'm good. You know what I was thinking about? I really would like to not get into a 10-minute discussion of microphones. I'm so deeply not interested in doing that. But I was looking at microphone options, and I have a little interface, and I was thinking about just getting SM58 and just getting a regular guy microphone, you know?
Yeah, that's a totally valid option. You should you just ask Chris to send you his recommendation, and then because he got these mics that are, it's not an SM58, and I don't exactly know why, but it is directional, that, and it like looks like an SM58. It's like a small handheld performance mic. And he sent one to, I think he's got two of them. I think Skylar's got one.
All the international boys are using?
Well, I think Bogdan might be on the SM7B, the classic, the Caleb mic. But anyway, yeah, I always point everyone to the Marco Arment blog post.
Yeah. I've been using this hunk of junk since I bought this.
Since Christ was a corporal.
To record Fits and Starts podcast that we started making in 2016. I'm 8 years into this budget mic, and I sometimes listen back to our podcast and I'm like, is it time?
Yeah. It is like an it gets the whole room.
Yeah. That's not great.
I recall.
Yeah.
I used to have it.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm chilling. I had a good weekend.
We worked on Sunday together.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was good old times.
Yeah, we have this landing page. So we discussed the whole like cohort 2 rebranded to just like we're looking for clients, like a specific type of client for a specific time. And we kind of like, I think we had some like general like disagreements that I thought were bigger than they were, and they were actually like smaller disagreements. Mm-hmm. And we like worked through them and got the copy to a place where like we both really liked it.
It was a good reminder too of just like I think we were missing each other a little bit, or talking past each other a little bit, and then it was like, you know, if we just pair for like, and it did take a few hours, but like if we just pair and like we kept on basically just being like, what do we say in here? We would like say it back and forth to each other in like a not very articulate way until it was like, okay, this makes sense to both of us. This feels good to both of us. And I think it came out pretty strong because what we ended up writing was not exactly what either of us started with.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had the thing that I really wanted, but I was like, I think I was having a hard time articulating the part of this that I valued, you know?
Yes.
Which was the, like, we are looking for a specific thing for a specific time, right?
Yeah. This is not an evergreen landing page.
Right. This is not a landing page that says, like, we're great boys. You should work with us generically.
Right. Because your point was, like, would have totally valid, which is, like, if we go on Twitter and say, we've revised the copy on our landing page. Like, who gives a shit? No one's going to retweet that. Yeah.
Right. So making this like a targeted sort of like event where it's like, this is a search, you know, and we're deputizing you, anyone who has gotten value out of our content or whatever, follows us on Twitter, enjoys what we do, wants us to succeed. We're deputizing you to help us in our search, you know?
And so, I think it's and where we landed on it, which I think is great, is like the slightly tongue-in-cheek tone of it is like, it's like we're looking for a date for the big dance. Mm-hmm. Like we do really, really well with clients when we get to be fully immersed in their problems for an extended period of time and solve some stuff deeply for them and walk alongside of them for longer than 4 weeks. And so what I want is a new partner, like a company who will partner with us, who we can walk alongside for a while and where we can solve some deep problems. And it's not that we're like hurting for business. In fact, every month in the company's existence has been busier and more profitable than the previous month.
Like, and in fact, the reason we worked for 3 hours on Sunday is because there are literally no unbillable hours right. in my week right yeah. now to work on things like this.
So it's like us stepping back and being like, well, what do we really want here? And what we really want is a big client with a big problem that we can work with for like 6 months. And mm-hmm. this is like our little dating profile of like, here's what we're really good at. We want like a long-term commitment with somebody. And here's what we bring to the table. We don't need to find five of these clients. Mm-hmm. If we found one of them, it would be terrific. If we found two of them, it'd be great too. But it's like, we want them to like reach out to us, and we want the rest of you, which probably I would guess 95% of the people who reach this page won't be the right fit for that. We humbly ask you to pass it along, because we need to find, you know, we don't need to reach 100 of these companies. We need to reach one really great one. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah. And I think that's it. And like, you know, there's a lot of ways in which like this style of work enables us to do like our best work, right? Like one of them is like, we do good. Like we have like multiple specialties within the team, right? Or specializations within the team. And like being able to like confront a problem with like all of us is like super powerful, right? Like we're like, as a team, I think we're like so much stronger than any one of us individually working on something. So like just like getting enough like time and focus on something that we're able to like put multiple people on the project and like get like deeply immersed in the work and like sort of solve a big problem is going to be really fun. Because right now we're at a place where like, and look, we could fill our dance card with like one or two day a week clients seemingly forever.
Yeah.
And like it would work. I don't think we're going to do our best work long term that way. And I don't think that
we'll do like perfectly adequate work. We'll do what the client wants us to do. It's just like what's a good analogy? It's like when we've been given the opportunity to be like a studio, it's like a session musician for like a great album. And they're like, you know, you help us develop great guitar parts and like be a session musician for this whole album. Like we did stuff that we're like incredibly proud of, and mm-hmm. it's like really great, and we feel really good about it. If the question is like, could you sit in for this one live performance and play exactly what, you know, I tell you to play? Like we can do that with the best of them. It's just that like now that we've had this experience, like being a real partner on a project and being with it for a longer time and like having some creative input and things like that, like we know, and like, the clients have told us, you'll see their testimonials on the site, like we know we do like knock it out of the park. And so we want to keep having that feeling. And like if a bunch of random gigs show up for us to do other stuff, sure, we'll do it and we'll do it well. But where we feel alive and where we like get incredibly good feedback from clients is these longer, bigger engagements.
Yeah. And like where the difference between hiring us and hiring someone else is clearest.
Right.
Like, because like one of the big differences is like we have John here doing product. So we're like, we take like a little bit more strategic approach to building things that is, you know, a little bit more methodical. And we also have like, Josh and I, so we've got sort of like a lot of technical chops to build things. And like when Josh and I pair on things, it's silly how quickly things get built. Yeah. Right. And you know, and Jacob is just like relentlessly capable of like crushing well-defined tickets. Right. So like the sort of like team of John, me and Josh are like leading to a bunch of well-defined tickets that Jacob is working on. Josh and I are crushing the like the sort of like big technical like ones that this ticket like really moves the project in a big direction one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And then like the Livewire stuff is like so fast. Like we prototype so quickly with Livewire. It's like ridiculous. So anyway, I'm just really excited to like unleash, you know, the full firepower of this armed and operational battle station on something.
As you can tell, Thunk has not demilitarized its language internally. So still something we're working on.
Sorry. It's just, they're lasers.
Oh, like friendly lasers? Like healing lasers?
Well, they could destroy an entire star system.
I see. Okay. Well, yeah. Well, it's something to work on maybe on a future future call. Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited about it. Excited to send it around. It feels like it's the right track, and excited to kind of see how it goes. We had a good conversation yesterday also about just sort of like the emotional state of like where we're at with stuff. I can't remember if we've talked about this on previous ones, but like I'm a very anxious person. I am my natural state is just that I'm afraid of everything. And
just fretting to and fro.
Yeah. And you know, there's all sorts of infrastructure in my life to make that not be the thing that makes decisions for me, you know? And like hopefully I don't like live a life of insanity about that. But you know, I was talking to a lawyer friend recently who left, you know, his big firm to go start his own, and he was joking about like every morning you wake up and you go, I might never sign another client again, you know. And you're very used to that, and it has been like a real adjustment for me to get used to that. And it's just an act of faith to just kind of like repeatedly be like, yeah, we truly don't know where our June money is coming from yet. Like we actually don't know, and so far something always shows up and it's always great. But it's like, it's a weird feeling that there's always a cliff out there. And you and I had a good conversation about the like emotional reality of that. And also kind of like gamed out some scenarios of like, what if we did have a terrible month? What if we had three terrible months? Like, what if we had to wind things down? And none of that has happened. In fact, it's been the opposite, but it was like a very good and interesting.
We keep trying to have a terrible month.
Yeah, it could be nice to take a little vacation. But it's like, it was a good conversation about like, it took some of the fire out of those scary scenarios for me, because I was like, well, if we have one bad month, we have money saved up. If we have three bad months, we still have enough money saved up. We'd probably just pay ourselves a little less. If we had like five bad months, we'd just take the money home and go get jobs. Like it's not that big
and
of a deal.
Be like way less stressed out,
right?
Well paid.
So I was like, okay,
healthcare and PTO.
Cool. Yeah. Let's like just continue to operate from a abundance mindset and have fun with it. And it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think like treating every cliff as an opportunity to like hone in on what we want as a business
totally
is like
yeah.
really, really pleasant, right? And like, I really enjoyed like putting together this landing page because it really like let us focus on like, okay, well, like what is the next client we want?
Yes.
You know, like, and let's actually target that. Let's not make like a universal all things to all men landing page that basically says like, hey, whatever you are and whatever problem you might have, we're certainly the best choice for you. We're looking for whatever it is that you have for us.
Yeah.
Like, we've turned down business for various reasons. And like, I don't think that there's a world where we get desperate enough to take business that we hate. Right. I think that like, treating it as though like, look, we've got this opportunity where we've got basically 2 months to go find a perfect client.
Yeah.
Right. And I think like, recognizing that like what the time span is and like that we have the opportunity to define like who we can serve best and like go find them and tell them that is like an interesting moment
for sure.
It's sales season. It's soup season.
It's
soup season.
Yeah. I feel great about it. And I don't know. I don't have that much more to say about it other than like we've sufficiently shilled it on here. You'll be seeing lots of links and tweets from us in the future. And if you like us and you want to help us find the right partner, you know, send us around.
Send us around.
I had another mini topic, which is I have answers on healthcare.
Oh yes, great.
The healthcare saga continues, and I think I know what we need to do.
Okay.
Which is nothing.
That's my favorite thing to do.
I think I've already talked about the situation on here, so I won't rehash my whole nightmare situation, which was that I was on Gusto at my last company. And when you go on to Cobra from Gusto, they refer you to this third party administrator, a TPA, if you will. It was a company, I have no shame about outing them, that is called Basic Benefits LLC, some like faceless corporation in middle America, who was supposed to get me Cobra benefits. And I paid them for 7 months. And then went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "You don't have health insurance." And I was like, "Excuse me, I sure am paying for it." Eventually realized like that this third party administrator just like totally dropped the ball on actually reinstating me.
A note to our European listeners, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I know. Oh my gosh. I was on Twitter and like somebody was like, you know what you should really do about this is vote for a candidate who supports universal healthcare. I was like, there are not enough four letter words for me to type into Twitter right now. Buddy, I've been doing it. Like I made my contributions
to voting with my dollar and my little tiny ballot pencil.
I've done all that I can for Chairman Sanders, and it was unsuccessful. And now I'm like, I wrote back to him, was like, which of the candidates would you say in our current cycle supports universal healthcare? Which one of them do you think is going to help me get Medicare for all?
John, I think you're confusing that with access to universal health.
Oh,
universal access to healthcare for money. Yeah. I support universal access to Lamborghinis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Universal access to Lambos.
who am I to restrict someone's access
to a Lambo? Yeah. This is the free market.
Yeah.
Of ideas at Lambos.
It's really just totally insane. One of the things that with this college professor, I'm getting into, this is so far where I'm getting so far afield from anything related to Thunk, but I had this college professor who really influenced me a lot because he was very, he did not express his own opinions that much and taught me economics. I studied economics. You took him for a class.
I know this guy.
And it's interesting because I realized towards the end of college that he's like actually a libertarian, and I don't agree with him on like almost anything. But he's very smart and interesting, and like had us like read Marx and read a bunch of other stuff that like, and one of the things that he used to talk about that really stuck with me is that like, he's like, markets for problems that are market shaped are like really incredibly a powerful technology. You know, there's no, who could deny, you know, that like markets are a incredibly powerful technology to solve market shaped problems. But like, what about all those problems that are not market shaped? And he would always talk about healthcare as like, well, some of the defining features of a market are like, you have like basically perfect information about what you're buying. Well, that's just completely not true in healthcare. Some of the things that really distort markets are things like moral hazard, where like somebody's best interest is for you to like not be in the best condition you could be in, or asymmetric information where one party has way more information than the other, or a three-party system where like there's an insurer and a payer and a patient and a provider, and it's like very complex and not. Anyway, he was really big on like, he was like, if the problem is not shaped, it's not a market-shaped problem, and you throw a market at it, like some wild, wild shit's going to go down and it's not going to be good. That idea has like really stuck with me. And I always think about that because we're like, anyway, our system is so freaking bad. It's insane.
No, it's funny. I just think all the time, there's this guy, Tim, I forget his name. He wrote this book on single payer that was really good. Mm. But he has this, I saw him speak in Asheville, in like 2015 or something, 2016. And he basically has this line, which is just stuck with me forever, which is taking care of sick people well is not a profitable enterprise.
Right. Yeah.
Which is just like, so like you can take care of sick people well, or you can make huge profits mm-hmm. taking care of sick people. But like the margin that it takes to make a lot of profit is also the margin to go from taking care of them the bare minimum mm-hmm. and taking care of them well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so like, the need for it to be profitable, causes the standard of care to just plummet.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. This relates to other stuff. I just heard a really great interview with Ezra Klein talking about like, the problem of journalism in 2024. And there was a bunch of interesting stuff he said, but one of the things was, he was like, you know, like having a news bureau in Tel Aviv and in Ukraine right now is like, it's a massive, massive cost center. If you want to have like mm-hmm. talented journalists in a war zone for an extended period of time who are going to get PTSD treatment afterwards and have like tons of security, and nobody wants to advertise on these stories because they're all very depressing. Like, he's like, that is just something that has to be subsidized by something else. And he's like, this is
the wire cutter.
Yeah. So like, you know, the New York Times is now like a games company. And for a long time, it was like, you know, regional newspapers were basically subsidized by the fact that like people liked human interest stories. And the only way for advertisers to like reach people in Milwaukee was to like buy ad space from like the one newspaper in Milwaukee, which basically had monopoly power. Very interesting. But it's like another one of those things that it's like, well, if you want like boots on the ground journalism in war zones, like that's not really a market shaped problem. And like for us to pretend it is like kind of, it's going to lead to some weird consequences.
But John, some entrepreneur is going to see an arbitrage opportunity and step in there and be like, this is my opportunity to get on the ground in Tel Aviv and really tell the whole story.
So anyway, that's very far afield. I think about that a lot. It's like, I'm like, I like capitalism for what we're doing. Like what we're doing is a very clearly market shaped problem.
Yeah. Capitalism for me, but not for them. Yeah, right. Speaking of, I don't want to forget about this, John, you and also the listener all need to go watch Tokyo Vice on Max.
Tokyo Vice on Max. I've never heard of it.
It is a 2-season show, starring American and Japanese actors. They did the genius thing where they make a show that's half in one language, half in another, so they can just subtitle the other half and sell it in both markets.
Nice.
Genius. I love it. It's great. All the English or all the American actors speak great Japanese. All of the Japanese actors speak great English.
That's fun.
And it is about a young American journalist working for the Meicho Shimbun, which is the paper of record in Tokyo. And so he's an American journalist, the first like American writer there. And he ends up sort of like stumbling into the Yakuza beat.
Whoa,
so
cool.
He's like covering the Yakuza.
That's fun.
And he, you know, makes friends with this haggard old cop who doesn't play by the rules. You know, all this stuff.
I'm into it.
Two great seasons. Just absolutely enthralling. I require that everyone watch it.
Great. Put it on the list. Mm-hmm. I have an actual list, so I'll put it on the list.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
you have nothing if not a list.
My like my legacy when I die will just be like, he had a lot of lists.
Make sure that you like leave the password to your lists for you know, in your will or whatever, for whoever finds you.
Okay, so anyway, healthcare. So I finally, after 30 hours of phone calls with this company, literally over 30 hours, and many emails, I threatened to sue them at one point. I had to basically turn into a Karen to get them to respond. And they finally did. I pushed them from a lot of different angles. I got Gusto to lean on them. I got my old employer to lean on them and did all this stuff. And then,
did you point your attorney brother at them at all?
I tried to. Oh, they also hit me with at one point when I was like, well, put me in touch with your legal team since you're not going to refund me. And they were like, oh, you're only allowed to get in touch with our legal team if you are a lawyer. And I was like, is that true? I don't know if that's true. Anyway, they were like, you got to call back with your lawyer. I was like, well, he's busy. I can't, like, I would have to coordinate. They just create all these hurdles. This is how they operate. Yeah. You know, they just hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. But it's working exactly as intended. And if I hadn't been so persistent, it wouldn't have worked. But finally, after all of this, I was like, just give me my money back. Just cancel the whole thing and give me my money back. And so they did. And it worked. So I finally got my money back. But now I need insurance. It turns out that I wasn't insured for the last 7 months. And I'm going
to... So what was the total dollar amount that you gave these swindlers? It's
over $4,000.
I mean, some would say...
I came out on top.
Spending 30 hours getting $4,000 is actually like a pretty good hourly rate, but lower than our hourly rate.
Yeah. So I got $4,000 back, and now I need insurance. And so you were saying... I was like, I'm just going to go to the... you know, healthcare.gov, the plan that's available to me is $770, which is just maddening and insane. But you suggested, won't it be better if you're going to pay that amount of money, just like do it through Thunk and like we can, you know, take it out of your paycheck and like, wouldn't that be a better deal? And so I did a bunch of phone calls with places. I tweeted, I heard, you know, asked people about where do you get your healthcare for a tiny little company. And pretty much what everyone has said is if you have a two-person company and one of the people is not even going to be on the healthcare because you're on your wife's healthcare, we're not even eligible. Especially because we're in two different states. They're like, you can't get a small group insurance for one person. That's not a thing you're allowed to do.
Come on.
That was basically it. And then a guy was like, but I can help you be a broker for like, I can go find you a deal. And I spent like 30 minutes on the phone with him. He said so many terms I didn't understand. At the end of it, he was like, I found you a deal that's 680 instead of 7070. It's like, okay, cool. That's, that was a lot of work to find a guy who I don't know if I trust because he himself is a third party administrator who could save me $90. I was like,
we love a TPA.
This is hell. So anyway, that's what I learned about healthcare. That was a pretty long tangent, but
so that's the move.
Thunk does nothing and I just get healthcare.
Okay.
And pay out of pocket.
Okay. Yeah. We should see if there's any tax advantaged way for us to give you the money to pay out of pocket.
Okay. The thing is,
because it's just
all
like
of these,
a lot of dollars.
Each of these things takes like 3 days of research, and I currently don't have healthcare.
Fair enough. Yeah. get your thing, get your healthcare, and then let's also email Emily and be like, is there a smart way for us to do this?
Sure.
Because, you know, she'll tell us something.
Yeah. I went into jiu-jitsu Saturday, and I was like, Lindsay, I got to tell you, I don't know if this is a good idea for me to be doing a combat sport while uninsured. Turns out I've been doing a combat sport for 7 months while uninsured. So,
yeah, you know, doing great.
Yeah. That's what's up on healthcare. Do we have anything else?
I'm going to do a one-on-one with Jacob after this. So that'll be my first one-on-one.
We're doing
with
our one-on-ones.
I'm excited about that. Yeah. One-on-ones. I've only done one with Josh and it went fine and great.
Yeah.
We solved a problem. Excited to do a one-on-one with Jacob, one of my favorite people. Things are good over here.
And you wanted to talk about J. Cole.
Just wanted to quickly shout out to the people. I am always, always here for a rap beef. And there is currently a rap beef, although I think J. Cole may have like put out a diss track and then said, I don't want to do a rap beef. So that's unfortunate. But he apparently, like, Kendrick recorded a verse that, like, sort of tangentially dissed Drake and J. Cole.
Yeah.
And no, then
it was pretty direct.
Yeah, sure. And then J. Cole sort of clapped back with a 3.5 minute song called 7 Minute Drill.
And also, apparently, I'm seeing from Google, also another song that had slurs in it that is not going over.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one. I have heard that people are mad at J. Yeah. Cole, so I should look into that. But yeah, anyway, long story short, it's a pretty good diss track. I like diss tracks a lot. I haven't felt this good since the Eminem MGK thing. just... The idea that, like, Kendrick dissed him, he dissed back. Now, I think the appropriate thing to do, if J. Cole hadn't weaseled out of it, is for Kendrick to just clap back extremely hard. And I'm so looking forward to that song if it comes out.
But, well, the two comments. One is just you referencing the Eminem and MGK thing. Your tolerance, which it should be said, your tolerance for white rappers is very, very high. And mine is nearly zero.
You having an unnatural alliance to losers is unlike you.
But then also, I think the thing that's great about Kendrick, at various times, I would have called myself a huge Kendrick fan. Nowadays, I'm like, I will listen to anything he puts out, but I don't know if I'd describe mm-hmm. myself as a huge fan. But
a Kendrick enjoyer.
And I'm a Kendrick enjoyer. The thing that he does is that Kendrick's not mean-spirited. Kendrick has a thing, like, as you can see from his verse on Control with Big Sean and who else was on that? Anyway, J Electronica. When he did that, like, years ago, it was very clear if you, like, look at it, where he, like, quote, dissed, like, everyone in the industry. Mm-hmm. That it was, like, very clearly, it's like, this is how he gets fired up. And it was mm-hmm. not, like, he didn't say anything really disparaging about anyone. He was just basically like, I want to be better than all of you, and I'm going to be better than all of you. Yeah. And that's like how he, it's like getting, like, amped up for a fight or something, you know? Uh-huh. Like, I've the image of Rose Namajunas, this, like, very good UFC fighter. There's, like, this, like, famous shot of her right before this championship fight, and she's, like, bouncing back and forth, and she's muttering to herself going, I'm the best. Yeah. it's like that, you know? And so yeah. The funny thing is, after he does that, it baits people into putting out these kind of cringy reactions where they're basically they swing back super hard at him, but then he doesn't even respond because he's like, I don't even feel you swinging at me. I just was getting myself amped up. And so I think that like he did that again, and it, I think ultimately it's going to make J. Cole look weak.
Yeah. There's just, like, you know, I think he has the ability to do the thing that Eminem does, and I wish he would, which is that, like, anytime anyone has ever beefed with Eminem, they have stopped rapping.
Yeah.
Like, MGK has not released a rap song since.
No, he made him change genres.
Yeah. He literally ended his career with a diss track. And he's done it, like, when's the last time you heard from Cannabis, you know?
Cannabis, wow.
Or Ja Rule. How's Ja Rule doing? Like, Eminem ends careers, you know? Yeah. I think Kendrick's got that firepower. I just wish he would. Anyway, yeah. This is a hip-hop show now.
I know. Well, I think here's my take on Kendrick right now is that he put out a therapy album, and that's not really what I was looking for. I'm happy for mm-hmm. him. It sounds like he's in a good place.
I'm glad he's therapized.
He's therapized. Seems like things are going well, but his little cousin, Baby Keem, is going to be like the fountain of youth for him. And Baby uh-huh. Keem is good, and they made that song together, the Hillbillies. Well, they made a few songs together, and every song they made together was very, very good. And they're going to put out apparently an album as the Hillbillies. And it's like, I have this hope that, like, he got so deep into his feelings about, like, a lot of different things, and, like, made some very, like, poignant and, like, sorrowful albums that I have a hard time revisiting because they're so intense. And I'm hoping that like Baby Keem brings them back to just like, let's have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as J. Cole once said, your first shit was classic. Your last shit was tragic. Your second shit put them to sleep, but they gassed it. Just say it.
He's saying, he's saying that Good Kid, Mad City put people to sleep.
No, I think he's saying To Pimp a Butterfly. I think Section 80 technically wasn't an album.
Oh, it was a. I see. Okay.
Yeah. So I think he's saying To Pimp a Butterfly put people to sleep, but they were like, "This is amazing and really insightful because it had jazz on it." I think if you lead into that take, it's a take you can ride for a while.
I mean, again, even at that time, that's when I was at like peak fandom, and I was like, this is a like incredible achievement of an album, and like I'm never listening to it again. You know,
not enough bangers.
Yeah,
it did have All Right on.
Well, it's incredible, but it's also incredibly sad. I mean, it's like watching. It's like the same way I feel about like a great. I watched a movie.
It's like Schindler's List.
I watched a movie. Yeah, I'm watching a series called Decalogue. Have you heard of this? This it was made for Polish TV in the 80s, and it's a 10-part series by this incredible filmmaker. Kieślowski. It's incredible. It's like this thing that like apparently like anyway, it very like renowned and loved, and it's very intense and sad and like dramatic. And I watched the first episode of Lindsay, and like something terrible happens in it. And we watched it. We were like, that was an incredible thing that like we're for sure never watching again.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about a lot of Kendrick music.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I'm with you.
I don't want to like on like it's like a Wednesday afternoon and I'm going to turn some music on. It's not going to be this like incredibly sad therapy album, you know?
I don't want to do generational trauma.
Right. It's like about real stuff. It's important. It's a real achievement. But I'm like, I can't be doing this. This is like,
yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. All right. To wrap up our media segment, Talented Mr. Ripley Show on Showtime. Have you seen the movie?
There's a Talented Mr. Ripley Show.
Yeah. It's all in black and white and it stars that Shakespeare guy.
The Shakespeare guy.
I think his name's Andrew. All right, now I have to Google his name. Shakespeare Andrew.
This is really good radio.
Yeah, great. Anyway, there's this guy named Andrew something or other who's an actor who is like a Shakespeare actor.
Okay.
And he does like modern interpretations of Shakespeare, and there's lots of clips of him doing like Hamlet or whatever. And he does it in this way where, like, he phrases things with, like, modern phrasing.
Okay.
But, like, sticks to the Shakespeare
that's cool.
words. And I've never, like, understood Shakespeare like I have from that's this cool. guy. He's incredible. And he's in this. And it's very good. And it's all in black and white. But it's, like, this really crisp, high-contrast black and white that, like, really is quite satisfying.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know.
Sounds very cool. You're into it?
Yeah. I'm into it.
I like it.
So watch that. Watch Tokyo Vice. Those are my recommendations. Shogun is also good.
Great. Okay. Now
you, the listener, have a list.
The picks of the week.
Pick of the week.
What are my recommendations? I'm not really watching any TV. I'm a little burned out on TV. I mean, I guess technically Decalogue is made for TV miniseries, but I've been big on movies. Really big on movies.
Movie mindset.
I really love. I just got. I've been collecting Blu-rays. I started getting Blu-rays, and I like getting the Criterion Collection ones because they come with all these special features. And I just rewatched Jackie Chan's Police Story. You ever seen that one? This is Jackie Chan.
I thought you were gonna say Rush Hour 2.
No, Jackie Chan in Hong Kong in the 80s, and he trained up his own troop of stunt people, and they do some of the most extraordinary things you've ever done. Like, during the credits, they roll the sort of like funny bloopers. And like most of the bloopers are like people being taken off in stretchers. It's like, it's an extraordinary movie.
What if someone one day said this story about us, right? Where it's like, you know, in the 2020s, they trained up their own troop of Laravel developers, and they did some of the most incredible things.
Yeah, and oftentimes got carried off in stretchers.
Yeah. Can't say they weren't trying, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's doing stuff like, I think also they didn't have, like, the same kind of safety laws that are in Hollywood. And so,
I can't imagine.
You know, there's stuff where he's like, I mean, it's like Buster Keaton, like, dangerous stuff. Like, you know, he's like, there's a bus going 30 miles an hour, and he has, like, an umbrella hooked onto the bumper, and he's like, his feet are dragging on the ground, and he's just, like, riding behind the bus. Like, stuff like that. You're like, I cannot believe they caught this on film. It's unbelievable.
That's great.
Yeah. It's a police story. A couple racy jokes, but probably good for the whole family.
Yeah. Good for most of the family.
Yeah. All right.
Sweet. This is a fun media podcast we've got here.
Yeah.
Where we review TV and music.
And I pop off about markets and...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if we needed...
This is a good one.
I don't know if we needed to record today.
No, but it's good. I think this was like a... This is a little... You know, we can't... Not everyone can be an OKRs review. You know?
No. I think they'd get a little dry. Yeah, this is good. A little reprieve.
Gotta hit the people with some content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, we'll be seeing you, John.
Yeah, talk to you real soon.